This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Okay, let's get started with the Nefesh HaChayim. This is the last shiur of this series in Johannesburg. Next week there probably won't be a shiur at all, because I'll be in Alabama, in a place that I don't think Jews have ever been. And the following week we'll probably pick it up in Los Angeles. And I want to continue with what we started doing last week. We'll move into the third parak. And very, very amazing ideas, those of you who remember it, as to why Hashem is called Mokom, and the relationship between space and matter and God, is what we discussed. I was thinking to myself, these shiurim are also life-changing. It's not that the shiur is life-changing, it's just that the Torah, any piece of Torah that you learn properly, is life-changing. But in a way, it's kind of misleading to talk about anything as life-changing, because nothing is life-changing. The only thing that is life-changing is pain. That's the only thing that changes life without your effort. If you have pain, chas v'sholem, your life changes. And you don't have to put a whole lot of effort into it. But without pain, the only thing that can change your life is you. So to talk about a life-changing shiur, that's nonsense. There's no such thing as a life-changing shiur. All the shiur can be is material for you to change your life with. But we don't tend to do that, because that needs work. We tend to go to a shiur and say, gee, that's life-changing. And then we go on with our daily week for the rest of the week. And then we come to another life-changing shiur. And then we carry on with the week. And then another life-changing shiur. And so we go through weeks and weeks of life-changing shiur. But our lives don't really change. Because shiurim can't change lives. The only thing that can change life is our own effort and energy. And that's why we talk about Omal HaTorah, to toil in Torah, because that's the pain. The pain is when you work on it. And the work doesn't mean like terrible work, like you've got to sit and toil and sweat. That's maybe when you're learning Gemara, that's part of the pain. But these kind of life-changing ideas, you just have to give yourself time to reflect on. That you've got to cut the time out. It's not the kind of thing, and sometimes you can sit and think about it in the traffic. If you turn your cell phone off, then you can, while you're driving, it's not a bad time to think about these things. But sometimes the ideas are so fascinating, you can land up in places you don't know how you got there when you think about it while you're driving. So really, one should take time out. And the time to take out, usually the time to take out is early in the morning. It's hard to take the time out when your mind's already been doing all sorts of things, and to then just quietly think of these deep ideas. But if one doesn't actually do that, if you don't take a piece of Torah, just one piece of Torah a week, whether it's from the Nefesh HaChaim, it's from the Gemara, from other things that you're learning, just take one piece of Torah and reflect on it for the week. Each morning, reflect on the same piece of Torah, 5 minutes, that's all. Then it can be life-changing. Then it really can be life-changing. Let's take the idea a little bit further. So we established last week that we're going to be doing Perek Gimel in Shaar Gimel, which is on the Kuf Nun Gimel in the Nefesh HaChayim. We established last week that everything is space. That since, how did we put it? We said if there was no space, there would be nothing. Therefore, everything is space. And there is nothing but space, we established. And the Ribbono Shel'Olam is space. That space is occupied by the force of the Ribbono Shel'Olam's presence. That doesn't mean that space is the Ribbono Shel'Olam. We don't know what the Ribbono Shel'Olam is. We can't know what Hashem is. But what we do know is that space is occupied by a force and an energy of Hashem. And that's all that Metzius is. That is reality. And the Nefesh HaChaim takes that idea a little bit further and says, V'hu inyan ha-kosuv, and that's the meaning of the verse in Yirmiyahu, Halo es ha-shomayim ve-so'oretz ha-nimole. After all, I fill the heavens and the earth. Now, what does mole mean? When you fill something, what else is in the container that you fill? If you fill something, what else is in it? Nothing, otherwise it's not full. So when Hashem says, I fill the world, what does that mean? that there isn't anything but me. That's all that there is. V'yosef mefurish b'mishnah Torah. It's better clear even in Dvarim. V'yodata hayom ki Hashem hu alakim b'shmem mal v'al ha'oris mitachas. Einoid, we say it every day in Aleinu. We say it three times a day. But it's a terrible thing. We don't even reflect on our tefillahs. Just take the time to take one verse in the tefillah and reflect on it for a few moments. Can't reflect on the whole tefillah because the tefillah is too long and the time is too short. The boy said, you've got to regard tefillah as a menu. When you go to a restaurant, you don't have to eat everything on the menu. You don't even have to read through everything on the menu. Tefillah, you have to read through it, but you don't have to enjoy and taste and savor every word of the entire davening, because we don't have the time for that, unfortunately. It should be, but we don't have the time for that. So pick things on the menu. One day you pick a verse in Ashrei, one day you pick a verse in the Shema, one day you pick a paragraph of Shemoneh Esrei. Enjoy yourself. Take about a menu of the most unbelievable spiritual ideas and opportunities for reflection and for thought and for feeling. And we do, that's how we do, like machines. What is it? What's with us? Why have we lost the art of connecting? When we're given the opportunity to connect three times a day, and we've lost the art. We shout in the davening, we yell in the davening, or we're silent in the davening, we don't do anything in the davening, our mind wanders in the davening, we babble away in the davening, we do everything except davening. And davening is just taking the menu, selecting something from the menu, and just enjoying it. Just getting close to it, getting in touch with it. And here's a pasuk we say three times a day. Ki Hashem hu ha'elokim b'shamayim b'mal v'al ha'aretz mitachas. Einoid. There's nothing else. And if one can get that right, imagine if you start your day really meditating on that. Really getting that deeply into your sense. Not intellectually, because everybody knows it intellectually. Ask any child in Cheder. What is there in the world besides Hashem? Einoid b'mal. There's nothing. People know it. But we don't act that way because it's not an emunah with us. We haven't entrenched it as an emunah, as a belief, as part of our belief system. It's not part of our belief system. It's part of our data system. It's part of our knowledge. So if you go through in your system of data, you go to your hard drive, you'll find out there a pasuk of emunah, you know it. But it's not the way we live because it's not what we really believe. We believe there are things in the world other than Hashem, otherwise we would daven properly. The fact that we don't daven properly because we're hurrying to get to work means we believe there are other things than Hashem. Clearly we do. It's not in our emunah system. And how do you get it into your emunah system? By reflecting, contemplating on it, just sitting with it a little bit, holding it, holding the thought, holding the idea, visualizing it, feeling it, morning, afternoon, night, and starting to live that way becomes very different. Listening to a tape somebody asked me to listen to comment on by a guy. I was listening to it in the car. And I didn't like much of it, but here and there were little gems. And the guy's just saying, he's appealing to people, and he's just saying, it's not a religious tape at all, not at all. And he just says, just connect with God and understand that everything in your life is a religious practice. There's nothing in your life that isn't a religious practice. Ours is the only religion that really gets that. But go and say it, and we don't live that way. Everything is a practice. So to understand, if we believe that Ein Oyed, there's nothing else but Hashem, then everything is a religious practice. V'chein ato ha'reis ha'lodav ki Hashem hu ha'elokim. Ein Oyed milvado. We say it on Simchas Torah. Ato ha'reis ha'lodav. It's a big COVID to get the first ato ha'reis ha'lodav. Who will get the ato ha'reis ha'lodav? The answer is nobody gets it. You hand it out, but nobody gets it. You say it year after year after year. Ki Hashem hu Elokim, ein oid milvadu, there is nothing else besides him. V'hu mamash k'mashma oi, she'ein oid milvadu yisborach klal. That's exactly as it is literally. There's no droshes about it. It's literal. There's nothing but Hashem. B'shum b'chino u'nekuda p'roti sh'b'chol ha'olamos, in no part or point or place in any of the worlds, elyonim v'tachtonim, in outer space, in shamayim, down on earth, v'habriyos kulam, in every creature, Rak atzmus achdusoi haposhut yisbarach shemo levad. There is nothing but unadulterated, indivisible divinity. There's just God. There is nothing else in the world. Nothing else but God. Then he quotes a Midrash which I couldn't find. It's probably not in our Midrash Rabbah, because our Midrash Rabbah in Dvorim is not the authentic Dvorim Rabbah. The authentic Dvorim Rabbah was lost for a long time, and so they used another Midrash. Nef Shechai might be quoting from the original one, because I couldn't find it. Where also on Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, Yisroel Nosan Mamosh, Yisroel kind of gave a reality to Hashem. Lochuv gave, these were non-Jewish people, they gave realities to Hashem. Moshe somohu af b'chalolo shel olam. Moshe places God in the space of the world. Shenemar ki Hashem b'shamay mimal v'la'oris mitzachas ein oid. Mahu ein oid? What does ein oid mean? Afilu b'chalolo shel olam. Even in the space of the chalal. What is chalal in modern Hebrew? Chalal is outer space. Chalal means the space of the universe and the space. And normally we think it means like the space in between the atoms, space in between the molecules, which is 99.999 recurring percent of the world. But what we're learning is it's 100% of the world. It's only space. Everything else is illusion. It's only space. That's what Chazal mean when they say he is the place of the world and not the world his place. All those places and spaces that you can sense, you can see, you can touch, you can smell, you can feel. Those things, those objects, those places are not objects. It's all Hashem. Again, it would have been very difficult to understand this if we didn't have some kind of a scientific grasp with it. So, at least we can understand it to some extent when we say we hold something in our hands, we hold a piece of wood in our hands, or we hold a piece of metal in our hands, what we're seeing is metal. But we're told that if you would contract that to its real material, if you would condense into what's really there, it would be a little tiny, it would be invisible. You wouldn't be able to see it. The fact is, you wouldn't be able to see it. So what are you looking at? You're looking at something invisible, expanded to occupy space. But it's still the something invisible. It's an amazing idea. We have to be conscious of it when we interact with the world. It's all nothing. That doesn't mean it doesn't have impact. Of course it has impact. There are forces in the world, and spiritual things have forces. And there's a force of gravity, and we know that a physical object can attract. But that's its spiritual force. It's not a physical force, because the physical thing is nothing. It's just empty space. So these are forces. These are energies. And these energies take on material forms that we can see. So we know material and that energy and matter can be transposed one to the other. That's what's happening. These are divine energies which take on physical forms so that we can see them. Some of them, we can't see all of them. So we learned in the parasha last week, Bilam couldn't see the force that the donkey could see. Was there. The donkey would have said, there's an angel with a sword in his hand right in front of me. And Bilam looks right through it. Can't see. So there are many forces that we can't see. Some of them we can see and they take physical form. So when the donkey saw that angel, we don't learn it like the Ramban learns it. What did he see? He saw a real human being. He saw a real form of an angel. When Avraham Avinu saw the three angels who came to him, what did he see? He saw real people, real things that he could touch and feel and talk to. But they were just energy. They were nothing. Everything we see and feel and touch is just energy. It's all angels. It's all just energy that we can see and feel and touch. That's it. So that we can relate to it. And whose energy? What is energy? Energy is a manifestation of Hashem's kach.
What about from Hashem's viewpoint?
When the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at the world, it doesn't look any different now from the way it looked before the Bria, before the creation. Before the creation, there was nothing here. There's still nothing here. Before the creation, there was only Hashem. There's still only Hashem. It's unbelievable. It's only we who see a creation. For the Ribbono Shel Olam, there was no creation. Everything carried on as before. Amazing idea.
אמנם כבר הקדמנו בתחילת דברינו שימשינו דברים זו כגח על האש שיעזור עם אוהב בגח על עושים שלא להיכנס לסבנים ולך ועושים מדי בדברים שאינם שניסים לסבנים הרבה ויקרובה חס ושולם. We've already introduced the idea that the words of Chazal in these kind of areas are like burning coals, that one has to blow them and tend them to get out, get the heat out of them, but not get too close because one can be burnt. And so with this awesome idea, En hadavar omur ela lechachom umevin midatoi pnimius ha'inyan. This is only said to people who are, have the wisdom to understand from within themselves the inner meaning of these ideas. That's what this is for. B'shi'ura d'libo levad b'rotza v'shoiv. Just by intuitive understanding. You can't do this by analytical understanding. You can't try and project it and understand it in a linear way. If you're thinking in a linear way, this is not for you. If you're able to think intuitively and you're able to think exponentially, then you can understand it. Berotzoi v'shoiv, but you have to run backwards and forwards, because if you stay in this intellectual space, you can go crazy. Everything is nothing. So your whole world starts becoming nothing, and life is nothing, and everything, you can become incredibly depressed, as some philosophers do. They go crazy with their own ideas. That's why it's Rotzoi v'shoiv last week, the Sefer Yetzirah said. You go in and you come out. You go in and you come out. You don't meditate all day. If you practice meditation, you meditate for a while, you stop. And even if you have what they call a day of meditation, doesn't mean you meditate all day. Meditate, you stop. You meditate, you stop. And it's like davening. You daven, you stop. You daven, you say, can't do it all the time. It's too much. And you do this in order to enthuse your heart for the practice of prayer, of tefillah. But to spend too much time thinking about this and working on this, that's dangerous. And that's what the Sefer Yetzirah taught us last week. If your mind starts running, get back to the space. As we've said last week. And
really, says the Reb Chaim Volozhiner, I would hold myself back from talking about this or writing about this. This is something I don't really want to even talk about.
Ki harishonim zal histeru ha'inyan ma'od, because the Rishonim hid all of this. Kemo shetir divrei kadosh Hashem harakeach zal huvolel shul adibah b'zeh rak b'remez.
They talk about this just in a hinting way without actually dealing with it.
Ki ne'emno eskel ruchom v'chisu dovar, because they remained faithful to Hashem and hidden this. The question is, why is he even writing about it? Why is he talking about it? I will shavti v'ro'isi, but I took a look around me. Shekach ha'yo yofe lohem v'fi doroseim. And I said, in their generation, that was fine, that was good. Aval ato hen yomim rabim l'loy moire. But nowadays, this is 200 years ago nearly, we've been for a long time without a teacher. They're no gedolim, there are no real teachers around.
The whole derech is Yosha Bein of Lalot Achrei Mitzias Sichlis. Everybody's doing their own thing.
The whole Yetzir Machshavis Leiv Ha'odum Moli Rak La'uf B'machshav Toil Kol Ashi Yatzir Libo.
And people are flying off into intellectual fantasies and wrapping and packaging it as Kabbalah, and that becomes their religion, and there's nobody actually holding them accountable. You can say they can say what they want and package what they want, and it's all okay.
V'ha'ilo al kulom shezeh toras kol ha'odom v'naseh moshel gam b'fiksirim. And then it becomes kind of accepted practice. This is what people are doing, and everybody starts operating that way, and even foolish people start using it. Le'emor, and they start saying, halo b'chol mokom b'chol dovar hu elokus gomu.
So that if you now use your logic, you say, well, so that means everything is God.
V'einam v'libom kol ha'yomim l'hamiku l'ayin b'zeh. And they try and think about it more and more deeply. עד שגם נאורים מנאורים ממשכו לביו לקבוע כל מעשיהם הנגוסם בזה לפי שכלום זה.
So they start now operating that way. Where does that lead you to? It leads you to pantheism. It leads you right into Avodah Zarah. So there's such a narrow line. Once you start going in this area, when you move off halacha, what guidelines have you got to know that you're thinking straight?
And that's why it's interesting with all the trends today and all the not just in Yiddishkeit or in religion, altogether the trends that become such accepted dogma. So for example, I was talking to somebody just today about the fact that today people talk very disparagingly about how our parents raised us. There was a generation where there was no emotion talked about, and all sorts of things were never talked about, and there wasn't a whole lot of warmth in the way that one talks about warmth today. And there are a lot of people, and psychologists and others, who talk very, very disparagingly about that generation. But they did what at that time was the fad. That's what they were told to do. That was the norm. And do you think that the therapists of our generation, of our children, are not going to say, your parents, they weren't even parents. They were your friends. They kind of played with you. They didn't know what it was to be a parent. No authority figure. You grew up without an authority figure. So now they say you grew up without emotion and love. And next generation they're going to say you grew up without an authority figure. Because with fads you can do that. Every generation there can be a different fad and everybody gets all excited. This is the way it's supposed to be. But with Torah we can't. It's got to be balanced all the way through because Torah doesn't change. And so with a lot of the New Age things, one has to be very careful. Some of it, and that's why I'm very meticulous whenever I speak about it, is to link that which is right in it to Torah, to Chazal, and that which is wrong to dispute. So it's very nice and it sounds great and good just to dispute it. So now you've got children who are raised on the whole self-esteem thing, You mustn't damage a child's self-esteem. And all these, we're a generation of abused children. Because our self-esteem is damaged as children, because our parents put major expectations on us. And they didn't allow us just to be ourselves. Terrible things these terrible parents did, we're told. So now everybody's self-esteem. You're wonderful, you're good, you're great. In the United States, there are companies now that hire praises. Not appraisers, praises. People who go around, great guy, well done, good, you're great. Because people crack up if they don't get it. There's a company that was in the Wall Street Journal the other day, hired a confetti thrower. She goes around throwing confetti, telling everybody they're wonderful. Because these kids can't operate without it. So that's the next generation of messed up people. We're all messed up. Because that's what life is. Life is you encounter people, sometimes bad people who do bad things, and sometimes good people who are doing the best they can, and it doesn't always work out for you. And you fix yourself. Life is about repairing. Life is about taking yourself into hand and fixing it and doing it and repairing the damage you suffered from whoever, parents, brothers, sisters, bosses, newspapers, media, everybody, there's damage all over the place. And life is about fixing it, repairing it, not going on and on about who the villain of this generation is and who's the villain of the next generation. And that's part of the danger. We find it in New Age stuff, and we find it certainly in so-called Kabbalah. People making things up and packaging them and selling it. This is Kabbalah. And says this is the Nefesh HaChayim. That's why I see a necessity to talk about it. Because people have to know what's emes and what isn't emes. And what are the boundary lines? How far can you go and how far can you not go? How careful you have to be. And be careful. He projects. What happens if we start acting practically using this philosophy? You can undo principles of Torah. And you can slide into a whole egoistic game of your Yetzer because you've just slipped off the tracks. For example, he just gives one example. We're very meticulous. There are places where you cannot think about Torah. And it's not only in bathrooms and toilets, it's any area. Sometimes, the way that sometimes billboards and advertisements are plastered, There are many places where you're not allowed to think in Torah. And for somebody who's busy learning, that's quite a challenge. But you could say, you could say, God is everywhere. Everything is God. So why can't I learn Torah and think about Torah everywhere? There was a great Talmid Chochem who went off his mind. He became a little bit crazy, and he used to take the Rambam into the bathroom and read, learn the Rambam in the bathroom. And they used to say to him, "Why can't you take the Rambam into the bathroom?" He used to say, "Why do you think the Rambam himself ever went into the bathroom? Why can't I take the Rambam into the bathroom?" So when you go off your mind with these things, anything you can do, anything. Everything's Hashem. So I'm always in a shul. What difference does it make where I am? I can always think in Torah. But Chazal say a person who does that loses his Olam Haba. Because you're disgracing Hashem's word. You're not showing enough kovod to the Torah. Even in back streets that are dirty, where there's a foul smell. I'm not supposed to do that. We can learn so much from the Goyim. It's such a tragedy that we have to learn from them. But it is so. They've kept certain things that we've lost. In meditation, is there a link between fragrance and meditation? What do they do? Incense. They understand. You can only meditate where there are pleasant smells. And we've got, it's a Torah concept. You're not allowed to think of Torah in a place where there's a bad odor. It doesn't go together. It shows a lack of respect for the Torah, the kind of Torah. It affects your thinking. It affects your feeling. It affects your senses. So you don't think about Torah in those places. But if somebody says Hashem is everything and Hashem is everywhere and there's nothing but Hashem all over the world, so what's the difference when I think about Torah? So you're acting in a way which is kidvar Hashem boza. Umele nishma sefer dehokra, hikores tikores, ufishu chazal, hikores olam hazeh, tikores olam haba. That you lose your olam hazeh and your olam haba, God forbid. But kama to'u yushu cholatzez chas v'shoen ha'yoyamik ba'anog v'mais api zeh haderech. And many other examples of mistakes that can occur if we start drawing practical conclusions from Kabbalistic ideas. And we're not allowed to draw Kabbalistic. And that was the big argument between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim in the time of the Chaim Volozhin. It wasn't whether the rites of Kabbalah. The Hasidim often say the Vilna Gaon was a big Kabbalist. Of course the Vilna Gaon was a big Kabbalist. We see from the Nefesh HaChayim, he's just touching on things that need to be understood. And I've skipped out pieces that are deeply Kabbalistic. We've only done the ones that are easier to understand of the Nefesh HaChayim. But the big machlokes is, can you pass an halacha with Kabbalah? The Hasidim paskan halacha using Kabbalah. Sometimes it is a machlokes between Kabbalah and Gemara. They will go according to Kabbalah. That was the Vilna Gaon's objection. When you start acting on the basis of Kabbalistic ideas, then anything's possible. That's how Christianity started. There was nothing wrong with the philosophy that Yoshua started with. All he dropped was the halacha. He kept the philosophy, kept the Kabbalah, kept everything without the halacha. So you create a different religion. That's what happens. No longer Torah, it's no longer Yiddishkeit. וזה שהביאני להיכנס לדבר בזה העניין ולעזר ולהחיק מצוי שיוכל להיבל להם מזה חס ושלום. So that's the reason that I'm even talking about this, so as to create the boundaries so that people have an authentic source for this. ולהבין על בואו יקום מה שרומזו לנו חזל בזה, to understand clearly what חזל have hinted at, והינום ככל דרכי השם הישורים ואיס לעשוס. Like in all good things with it to do with Hashem, ואיס לעשוס, there are times when you're going to do something unconventional. For the Nefesh HaChayim, from the Lithuanian tradition, to write a sefer, a semi-popular sefer like the Nefesh HaChayim, that touches on Kabbalistic issues, that was completely unconventional and revolutionary for his time, and he says that it needed to be done. And that's the same reason that we're learning it now. Why would we be learning these parts of the Nefesh HaChayim? There are parts to learn, the fourth shire, which we'll get to in the Hashem, is very important to learn. It's not that Kabbalistic. But even the Kabbalistic parts for the same reason, since people are talking about what is Kabbalah, and just everything goes, absolutely everything goes. It's important to understand what the boundary lines are, and what authentic Kabbalah is, and what is meant by it. So that's the reason that we're doing it too.
So was this book written for the general Amorites?
No, it wasn't written for the Amorites. he's concerned about is that that even